Hi, everyone.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to Wicked, Weird, and Grim, your number one podcast for a trip through the history of the odd, haunting, and mystifying. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Aura. Together, we're the Grimm sisters.
Today, we have a super interesting episode that details a cultural phenomenon that specifically takes place in Celtic areas such as England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales in the 18th and 19th century, with immigrants bringing the practice with them to the mountains of Appalachia of North Carolina, which is very close to where we live. Mm-hmm. And it survived as legends about nomads who roam the countryside looking to absorb dark and powerful sins.
And if that sounds familiar, you're probably thinking of Harry Potter and the Death Eaters. And that's not too far off from what we're talking about today. So the phenomenon that we'll be discussing today is called sin eating. And sin eating was essentially when a person consumes a ritualistic meal, usually over a dying person, but sometimes even a corpse, in order to spiritually take on the sins of that deceased person. The food or drink was laid on the dying or freshly dead individual's chest and believed to absorb the sins, thus absolving the soul of the person. And the sin eaters would then eat this food and as a consequence would carry all the sins of the people whose, you know, sins they had eaten.
Tracing its origins to ancient Egypt and Greece, the practice of sin eating also stems from the Catholic rite of absolution, or the forgiveness of sins by a priest as near the time of death as possible. Of particular concern to the church, mainly as it grew and gained power, was the fate of people whose sins had been forgiven for the most part, but who may have had unconfessed sins before they died. Several ideas, each more bizarre and weird than the one before it, emerged as to how to deal with this particular predicament.
And as the church began to grow even more powerful, the idea of purgatory developed as well, kind of as this intermediary place for people whose sins were forgiven, but they were not yet able to enter heaven, possibly because they had unconfessed sins before death, or they were still ruminating on something that they had done wrong. And in the Middle Ages, before the Protestant Reformation took place, the practice of buying and selling indulgences was a means for the church to make money by essentially selling forgiveness. This was an age of rampant corruption in the Catholic Church, which, as we know, is pretty much always been corrupt in some way or form, which is, you know, the most part for most religions. But at this time, they really were leaning into, like, the capitalistic practice of taking money from people and selling them back, you know, usually false ideas about their soul or their place in heaven, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And if someone had already died and was waiting in purgatory, you could buy an indulgence for them to get them into heaven more quickly. So as you can imagine, a ton of family members would just like buy these up in droves because they were like, of course, we don't want our family members to be in purgatory or have the risk of going to hell or anything. So that was a really major business model for the Catholic Church at that time.
Yeah, it's huge.
And so in some areas, particularly those with like strong Celtic and pagan backgrounds, which are, you know, notably Scotland and Wales, as we talked about, the idea of sin eating developed possibly as a fusion between pagan culture and Christianity, but definitely because of needing an alternative to buying indulgences.
Yeah. I know with like the indulgences, you guys probably have learned about that in your history classes because it's a huge part of the Protestant Reformation.
So yeah.
It's part of like why that happens because they were selling indulgences to raise money for St. Peter's Basilica. Which
yeah.
It worked, I guess.
I mean,
she's there.
Yeah. But like how many priests and bishops and cardinals just, you know, were like snatching money for themselves,
right?
It was such a
I bet so many people got rich off of that.
The Borgias era of crazy corruption, but times five plus capitalism.
Yes.
So.
And again, it was just like a huge, huge grift. And honestly, I have to say, I feel it kind of goes back to like what we were saying in one of our very first episodes when we did the Salem Witch Trials is I feel so bad for the people who lived in this era because they were just kind of trapped in like constant religious fear.
Exactly.
I mean, Aura knows this, but there was recently a death in my family, and I cannot imagine if my biggest concern when she was on her deathbed that would have been that like, oh, her sins aren't forgiven.
Yeah.
You know, but instead I was just like, you know, hoping that she was peaceful and and comfortable and, you know, that my family was okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about that. And I just can't even imagine going through something that's like really scary and traumatic like that. And then on top of it, being worried about like hell.
Yeah. And like the real kicker is like in these times, there was always something else to worry about when it comes to, like, your religious purity or your religious absolution. Like, you're never perfect. You're never good enough. You're always having to fight more and more to get into heaven.
Yeah.
And that's part of why the Protestant Reformation was such a big thing, because, you know, Martin Luther and his theses were so against this idea of, like, buying indulgences and, like, this capitalistic atmosphere of Catholicism at the time. And specifically, they also believed in the doctrine of predestination, which means, like, no matter what you do in your life, you are predestined for heaven or hell, and there's nothing you can really do about it.
Yeah.
So it entirely eliminated this idea of having to buy into things that would get you into better standing, because, you know, you're either born a good person or you're not. And that's almost, I think that's almost scarier in some way, because it's so black and white. But
you don't know if you're one of the predestined.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to, if you believe this, you're going to live your whole life hoping that you are one of the ones that's predestined, and you're going to be, like, living for God and doing all of this, you know, kind of religious stuff and work. But then by your own belief, it might have all been a waste of your time.
Yeah. And then also, really, in my view, I'm like, what's to stop you from living, like, absolutely crazy? Because if you're already going to heaven, then like, there's no way you can be ongoing to heaven because of predestination. So it's like, what's the point?
Why would you?
But yeah, so it was kind of just Catholic versus Protestant, and the Protestant Reformation really just turned a lot of things on its head. But before that time, it was really about finding alternatives to purchasing these indulgences. And that's kind of where sin eating arose in between the cracks.
Yeah. And of course, I think also it's really interesting that this practice really came about in these, like, Celtic regions. Because as we know, a lot of the Celtic regions ended up becoming very, very Protestant.
Except for Northern Ireland.
Yes.
Don't worry, guys.
We won't hurt you that way.
We stand with you.
But yeah, in the Celtic areas we mentioned, the meal usually consisted of a piece of bread, likely because of the influence of the Christian bread of life, but also because bread was readily accessible at the time. As soon as someone was in the throes of death, the piece of bread would be placed on his or her chest. Once death had occurred, someone would run through the village to find the sin eater. The task alone could not be an easy job, as a sin eater was not allowed to look anyone in the eye at the risk of forcing eternal damnation on whoever should behold him or her.
Just, like, the ultimate power trip.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I would be looking at a lot of people, actually.
I know. And someone cuts, like, in front of you at the grocery store. It's like, death,
also, though,
damnation.
It's such a, like, with great power comes great responsibility. And I feel like I would just use that.
Yep.
You know, I'd be like, all right, eternal damnation on you and your cow.
Yeah. Eternal damnation on you and your cow.
Yes, I don't know.
So essentially, when the sin eater was brought to the home of the deceased, a stool would be brought out for him or her to sit on while eating the cursed meal, which, as we've mentioned, might consist of nothing more than an old crust of bread. It really depended. And once it was consumed, he or she would usually be paid, usually half a shilling, just a few dollars in today's money. But sometimes it was 2 shillings and 6 pence. It's really, it varies based on the place and the time. And then they would be chased off, sometimes with yelling, bricks, stones, pitchforks, etc.
This makes me sad. Aww.
No, it gets worse.
I know. I can see that from this paragraph.
It always gets worse, guys.
So sin eaters were usually beggars. So they were the poor, they were the sick, they were outcast. And they would be summoned upon the death of a loved one and would arrive typically wearing a dark cloak and hood and eat a meal that had been placed upon the corpse. And while doing this, they would recite whispered lines, absolving the deceased of all their worldly sins and taking those sins into themselves, thereby affording the dead passage into heaven rather than being damned to wander the world.
And despite this being a rather critical aspect of life and death in these Celtic areas, sin eaters were paid, like I said, only half a shilling to sometimes 2 shillings, which is a pitiful amount of money for the jobs that they did. They literally absolved people of their sins and allowed them to go to heaven. And they were like, here, for your trouble, have, you know,
have a dollar,
have a penny. So literally, like, just as bad as the service industry today.
Like, worse, because you're doing this awful job and there's this nasty, like, social thing that comes with it.
Exactly.
You and, like, they literally would just like shoo them away.
Literally one of the worst service jobs in history. But
this is like Dirty Jobs Middle Ages edition.
What? That's gonna be the title. Dirty Jobs Middle Ages edition.
I'm proud now. I've never come up with one before. You're always good at coming up with the titles.
But honestly, it's just so sad because like there's such this horrible stigma. And, like, they're literally eating sins for, yeah. like, the people of their communities and neighbors and everyone else in the community are, like, you're unclean, you're evil for having all of these sins, but we're going to keep demanding you to yeah. take them. So it's like...
You are a important part of our community, but we hate you.
Yeah.
It's, like, basically what it was.
Ugh. Ironic. The ultimate irony.
Sounds about, like, humanity, really.
Yeah.
That's about, like, a very...
Are we surprised? Deal. Not really.
Are we sad? Yes. These individuals are stepping up and doing, like, this major thing for their community, and they're just being shunned, and it's so sad. Like, we've already said 100 times. Not only that, but along the lines of what everyone's probably wondering, who ate the sins of the sin eaters? And that was nobody. Nobody ate their sins, so they were just kind of like, sucks for them. I guess you're going to hell, or, like,
yeah.
maybe a ghost or whatever.
Eternal damnation.
Yeah. Essentially, the sin eater traded his or her own soul in exchange for the tiny, tiny, tiny bit of money that they earned and absorbed the sins of so many people, like 10 people to hundreds and hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically they were just like there was nothing they could do. They were just like out of luck.
Yep. And like we said, this is horrible. They're helping families in their grief, literally taking on sins of others when they were outcasted, shunned, literally damned to hell. Not to mention scapegoats for literally everything. Plague, deaths of livestock, unintended deaths, storms, that kind of thing. So it's like, here, all these people died, and we're going to blame you for it, but then we're also going to make you take their sins. So yeah. It's like, okay.
It's like the worst job ever, honestly.
But it is interesting to note that sin eaters are often compared to Jesus of Nazareth because he is said to have absorbed or taken the sins of those he died for when he was crucified in the Christian religion. And, you know, sin eaters are doing the exact same thing
yeah.
and they're being outcasted. So it's like, it's a very ironic telling that the Christians or people who are aware of this kind of
they couldn't make
parallel. Yeah. History is literally just people doomed to repeat their mistakes.
It really is.
They never learn. Humanity never learns.
No,
and
never.
It's like, that's what
oh my gosh.
Is the worst thing is like, we can have thousands of years of things that tell us not to do something and then we'll still do it.
We still do it. And it's like, I know that like today, a lot of times people get annoyed because we're always saying to each other and especially to kids, like, be nice to each other, be kind, you know, don't exclude people. But mm-hmm. like, that there's a reason that that's such a big thing that parents have to teach their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of history like this, like
yeah.
where people were so outcast like
mm-hmm.
this and looked so down on. And while thankfully it's not, you know, we don't do as much of that today as
mm-hmm.
we did then. It's not really the same. You know, it still is kind of that same, like, I guess, like moral that hopefully, you know, most people have, which is
yeah.
that, you know, you should show respect to other people and show kindness and
yeah.
especially
yeah.
people who are, you know, doing something helpful to you.
Yeah. But, like, if I really think about it and I think about Christianity,
mm-hmm.
that is, like, the core tenet and the foundation of Christianity.
Yes.
And that's what
do
so many
others.
Christians have strayed
yeah.
so far from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so ironic because they're so willing to, like, judge other people and outcast other people and say, these people are going to hell for this. These people are going to hell for this. These people are bad Christians. But if we look back, Jesus was friends with prostitutes. He was friends with debt
yeah.
collectors. He was friends with people who had demons and, like,
mm-hmm.
all of this stuff. And it's, like, just... be kind.
Yes.
It's literally that simple.
You know, something too I think is that a lot of times I think we look at people who maybe are different from us in some way. They live a different lifestyle or
mm-hmm.
maybe they don't have as much money or they have more money or whatever. And we just think like, oh, well, there's nothing I could ever have in common with them because we're so different. And we either have sort of a chip on our shoulder because we think they're better than us
mm-hmm.
in some way. And we feel like we wish that we were them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like a jealousy or we feel like we are the better one. And so we're looking down on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, in reality, we're all human. And so there's
mm-hmm.
something that you do have in common with those
yeah.
people.
You're both human.
There
you both live on earth.
There.
You're
there's
both.
A way to have a friendship there, a relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just have to be kind.
Yeah. And empathy. Empathy is such a big thing. We've lost so much empathy.
Oh my gosh,
and the ability to like see things from others' perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it's like the farther we go into this very like vitriolic political landscape, empathy is being thrown out the window. And I think that's really like the crux of it. Like, I think both religious people and non-religious people can agree that like empathy is one of the most important things that we need to keep cultivating and one of the most crucial things that is going away. So
yeah. Just to bring it back to the fact that like sin eating was a job, working in a restaurant, we have the meanest people.
People are so rude to service.
And I mean, for the record, you know, for every mean person, we have 10 really nice people who are really considerate and really like great. But
it's still one in 10 people though.
Just to completely destroy your day.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not even always that they're having, like, they're not even throwing some, like, personal attack at you or anything like that, but it's just, like...
Not even treating you like a human.
Yes, it's just the fact that, like, they're just being so mean about something really insignificant.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there like, well, do you want your food or not?
Yeah.
You know, do you want to eat here or not? Because if you really want to eat here, then why are you being mean to me?
Yeah.
Why are you being mean to us? And it's kind of the same thing. It's like, this was something actually important to these people. It wasn't just... you know, going out and getting dinner on a Tuesday night. It was literally like absolving their sins and, you know, sending them to heaven. And you'd think that they would be extremely nice to the person who was helping them do that.
Yeah. Especially when they had the ability to like look at people and damn them.
I know, right?
And they didn't use that for ill, like respect.
I could never do this job because like the minute somebody kicked me out of their house and started yelling at me, I would just be like, damn you to hell.
Exactly. We would both just be like, damn you, damn you, damn you, damn you, and damn you. This is why we're not sin eaters. So.
Yes, exactly.
Anyways, so, you know, they're outcasts, they're not accepted, they're scapegoats, and these negative associations with sin eating kind of align closely with the ideas surrounding trading your soul for material gain, which was a really big thing in the Middle Ages and even beyond that. So there's, of course, like the very well-known Faustian legend of like a man who sells his soul to the devil for another year of life or like certain amount of life or something like that. Similarly, you have people who believe that witches are people who sold their souls to the devil in exchange for, you know, magical powers or powers beyond their mortal capabilities.
That's definitely what we did.
Yes. I was like, I think it's funny because I didn't even have a soul to sell. But so really, Satan got the short end of the stick on this bargain. But unlike these kind of conceptions, though, what set the sin eaters apart was that they were able to allow another person to enter heaven. They were able to help other people. They were able to relieve these families of grief and horror and fear. And yet they still were not appreciated.
Akin with associating sin eaters with Faustian bargains and like witches, sin eating was definitely not a practice advocated by the church. Firstly, because it might have taken away money that was being earned by selling indulgences. And like we mentioned, they were selling indulgences not just to line their own pockets, but also to go and like build, you know, cathedrals.
To continue lining their own pockets.
Yes. Like they were using that money to sort of add to like the, I guess like the grandeur.
The glory of.
Of like what we kind of all think of when we think of like a Catholic church, you know. Or at least in Europe anyway.
They're
all really like that in the U.S., but in Europe they are. And so that said, the ritual of sin eating was immensely important to the communities that completed it. So, you know, care had to be taken if a church minister was nearby as the threat of excommunication or execution or being burned at the stake, which I guess that is execution, but it's especially bad way of execution.
It's not just like, you know, chop your head off. It's like burned at the stake,
whatever,
like
Scotland
witch trials.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. You know, so basically the threat of like death or completely being socially outcast. Those things always hung over the heads of the people who engaged in the sin-eating culture. So the communities that adhered to this practice had to do so, you know, clandestinely and, like, very carefully and secretly.
Mm-hmm. And the last officially recognized sin-eater from these areas we've mentioned died in 1906 in the United Kingdom. And he is buried at St. Margaret's Church in Rattling Hope, England. And Richard Munslow, who was a local farmer as well as a sin eater, was you know, he was in unusually good social standing and was pretty well-to-do,
wow,
rather than the typical outcast. So it's actually thought the reason he assumed the role of Sin Eater was, unfortunately, because of the tragic deaths of four of his children at very early ages, three of whom actually died in 1 week of scarlet fever, which is around May of 1870, I think. Despite this, it still took some time for him to be commemorated with a ceremony and funeral of his own, which actually happened in 2010 in Rattling Hope. But, you know, despite the delay, he was likely one of the first of the Sin Eaters of his profession to be afforded such a thing because they were so outcasted. And like we said, even though he was pretty well-to-do and had a good social standing, it still took 104 years to finally, like, commemorate him and give him a ceremony and funeral, so...
Reverend Norman Morris, who presided over the restoration of Richard Munslow's grave, he was pleased that Munslow was finally able to put his grave in an excellent state of repair, and he also stated that he had no desire to reinstate the practice of sin eating, which is
he was like, yeah, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it,
like,
there.
It's just not going further.
And, I mean, although it's said that there's no current culture that participates in sin eating, I'm not completely convinced of this.
Ooh.
Because, like, you know, you have rituals from thousands of years still being carried out and participated in and stuff. So I'm not entirely sure in, like, places like, you know, Isle of Man or some of these, like, very small Welsh communities that, like, something like this isn't still carried out. Maybe not in the same way it would have been, but perhaps there's a tradition of, like, eating bread at a funeral or something like that.
Yeah, like, it's kind of evolved.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can totally even see just, like, it being a thing that, like, the family members would sort of sin eat for a dying family member.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, for example, if somebody was dying, you'd, you know, put the bread on their chest and then the family would just eat the bread.
So, yeah, not completely convinced sin eating isn't still a thing or some form of it. It actually, in some way, reminds me of Jewish burial and death customs, because there's a very big association between the way that death is observed and the way that the grief or mourning period of the family or, like, the people around them is related to that, kind of. I feel like it ties into a lot of different cultures, as we said. Stems from Egypt, stems from Greece, it's in the Appalachians now, it's in Celtic areas, so.
Like...
Yep. But yeah, so that's sin eating, a very interesting tradition and custom that was really, really fun to research. They deserve so much more credit. But yeah, so thank you guys for listening. It was really fun to talk about this. We are trying to implement kind of shorter scripts.
Yeah.
And we're going to release every 2 weeks now because that's kind of been like the schedule we've been doing anyways.
Right.
Also, it just makes it easier for us to have quality content for you guys that, you know, that we enjoy recording and that you guys enjoy listening to. So
we both have a lot of stuff going on in our lives as well. So,
yeah.
You
we
know,
are both surviving, barely.
Yeah.
Barely surviving.
Yeah.
I need someone to stress eat for me. Like, just
take on your stress.
Not sin eating, but stress eating. Someone eat my freaking stress, please. But yeah, so as usual, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And we are on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We are at Wicked Weird and Grim. On Twitter, we're just at Wicked Weird Grim.
And please leave us a review on Apple because we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, 5-star.
Yes, definitely 5-star. Always 5-star.
Not to sway you.
We're also on Patreon and we would love even just a couple dollars. Would be awesome.
And as always, you can leave us a voice message on Anchor. We'd love to talk to you guys that way and hear what you guys had to think of the episode of Sin Eating. Thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you next Wicked Weird Wednesday with the Grimm Sisters. Bye.
I am poor and unemployed and, or not, we're neither of us are unemployed, but you know what I mean.
We're too employed.
We're
Please
we're
stop.
Employed in a way that doesn't help.
We do not want to be any more employed.
No. It mainly grew and gained power was the fate of people who... What did I say?
You said it mainly grew and gained power.
Oh.
But it's like a...
I'm struggling.
You can do this.
I can. Okay. Sorry, I feel like I don't have a, you know, a situation here with my, okay, we're fixed now. The microphone was in the way, like I couldn't see.
We're having a situation.
A situation.
With our duct taped microphone.
Yes. I literally cannot move the mic because of that. But, yeah, okay, so the clamp on my mic, the one that clamps down onto the table so that it stays in place, it broke, and now I have to duct tape the mic to the table in order to use it. It's great fun.
We're nothing if not resourceful.
We are, yeah.
And
yeah.
Poor.
Poor. Maybe poor. Yeah, seriously, like.
Please support us on Patreon.
this is why we ask you guys to do that.
Yeah.
We're struggling. I mean, we're broke.
Yeah.
So you guys are probably broke too.
Two broke girls.
This song's gonna be recorded. Sounds of
I'll put duct it on tape. The blueberries. I'll be like
the sounds of duct tape.
This is
ASMR.
This is our hardware episode where we teach you how to keep your mic from falling off the table.
We're not very good at it actually.
You use duct tape and you pray.
Pray. Lots of prayer.
Although we don't have souls, so
I don't know.
At this point it's cursing. Mm-hmm. When I went to Boston, we went to the Isabella Gardner Art Museum, which
so
is gorgeous. It's so pretty. But let me tell you, I counted like 200 paintings and or other art pieces of like Mary with Jesus like sucking on her breast.
Yes!
And it was just really awkward. And Jesus always has eyes that are like adult eyes and
they're
a baby.
So scary.
And it's like something's wrong in
there's,
this.
There's
something's
something
very wrong here.
Medieval art that is like it's like Uncanny Valley. You
it's
know,
unsettling.
Like, it looks human, but it's not human anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's something wrong with it.
I'm like, why does this baby have the eyes of like a 40-year-old man? Ooh. It's like, please stop.
It's like Jesus didn't even live to be 40.
Exactly. I'm like, this is definitely not getting you closer to
no,
heaven, guys.
This is disturbing me, actually, giving me nightmares.
But yeah, so much of it is like the one female artist I did see doing it, it was much more maternal and less weird.
Like, probably very sweet.
Yeah. It was beautiful. And the rest of them, I was like, I feel physically
like,
uncomfortable.
Happening?
Anyways,
okay.
That was a tangent.
Wow, that was...
Wow, us on a tangent?
We lost that. We really lost that one. Okay. As we know, a lot of the Celtic regions ended up becoming very, very Protestant.
Mm-hmm. Except for Northern Ireland.
Yes.
Don't worry, guys.
We won't hurt you that way.
We stand with you.
But yeah.
Just Dairy Girls running
dairy
through
girls.
My head. Anyways, I had this meme recently that was very Dairy Girls, and I just had to share it with you. And it's like this tweet, and it says, outing my girlfriend as a Protestant at Christmas dinner so my granny forgets that we're both women. And so, and someone commented and was like, sounds like a Dairy Girls episode.
It does.
And someone else was like, my very Christian grandma, what do you have there? Granddaughter holding her girlfriend's hand. A Protestant. I was like, that's accurate.
Oh
that's Dairy Girls in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I don't know how many, 104 years. Nope. Yes. No.
Wait. It would be
104 years to finally like commemorate him and give him a ceremony and funeral. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was 104.
I was like, God, I can't do math.
I was like reading the next paragraph, you know, to prepare for what I had to say. And I was like, wait, what is she adding? What is she?
I mean,
she
I definitely adding? Did what not sell doing? My soul to the devil because I can't even do basic math. So I would think that I'd have at least some type of talent.
Yeah,
beyond
definitely.
That.
If I had sold my soul, I would have. One of the first things I would have been was like, please let me be better at things like math because.
Please let me understand.
Yeah, it's like I just want to not struggle.
Whether or not you want to have your stress eaten, that just sounds really weird.
It does.
Just
but like in a great way.
Yeah, way. It just sounds vaguely sexual,
it does.
And I'm like,
okay.
Maybe don't comment on that. You never know.
Yeah.